Today, Kersplat, the collision between economics and politics. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Yesterday, as I discussed in my live show, the RBA held the cash rate at 3.85%, which surprised almost all of the economists, the media, and Labour politicians alike. If you listen to Michelle Bullock at the press conference, she was careful to talk about caution, waiting for more data because the monthly inflation stats are volatile and the direction of travel will be down, just more slowly than markets have been betting.
Decided to leave the cash rate on hold at 3.85%. Monetary policy has been working as expected, and we've made good progress on bringing inflation down over the past 18 months. But quarterly trimmed mean inflation has only been in our 2 to 3% target range for one quarter, at 2.9% in March. Very pleasingly, unemployment remains low at 4.1%. And we've already cut the cash rate by 50 basis points since February this year, the effects of which are still to flow through to the economy. The data and policy outcomes around the world since the May meeting have been close to what we expected in our latest baseline forecasts published in May, but economic conditions remain uncertain. And we're waiting to confirm whether inflation is still on track to sustainably reach 2.5%. Since the May meeting, the two monthly CPI indicators have been broadly consistent with our forecast for headline inflation and show that we're moving in the right direction. However, some components suggest that underlying inflation in the June quarter could be a little higher than our forecast. Wages growth has eased over the past year, but growth in unit labour costs remains elevated alongside continued weak productivity growth. By our next meeting in 5 weeks, we will have the June quarter CPI, another labour market reading, further information about international developments, and an updated set of forecasts. So the board decided to wait a few weeks to confirm that we're still on track to meet our inflation and employment objectives.
Naturally, property portal Domain was so certain of a rate cut that a post was made on its Facebook page noting, with property prices forecast to accelerate, and a graphic that the RBA had indeed cut rates by 0.25%. You can't make this stuff up. Markets, of course, have now shifted their focus to the next meeting later in August, when more employment and inflation data will be available. And the media are now also repeating their belief that rates will be cut then and reprising their flaccid commentary on rising home prices and the imperative to buy, buy, buy. But it might not be that simple. Oh, and remember the strong connection between the media and the property overlords. Just saying. The fact is, while the global uncertainty around Trump and tariffs is not helping, the seeds of the non-rate cut were largely sown locally, thanks to high migration, massive government spending, and their stimulus measures. In other words, the government did it. Now, I had a wicked thought yesterday. I listened to Jim Chalmers saying, I think it's certainly the case that the market was surprised. I think certainly economists were surprised by the outcome. And I think it's fair to say as well, millions of people who were expecting more rate relief yesterday and didn't get it. But my thought was this, having stacked the inflation numbers with a broad range of household support measures like electricity rebates and stacked the now separate independent board with more Labour-friendly members, he still failed to force the RBA's hand. This was another moment when appointing a new central bank governor and stacking the decks did not go the way you planned, once again. More broadly, the significant rise in population across the country, which according to OECD figures is running at 2.1% compared with an OECD average of just 0.6%, explains the underlying economic problem that Australia faces. The overwhelming majority of Australia's population growth is being driven by working-age migrants. Homegrown families take time to build and grow so you can plan the schools and homes and health infrastructure over time. But when you open the floodgates and swamp the country, with almost now close to 2 million adult souls all wanting homes, schools health services and roads to drive down instantly, it's no wonder that we have a major issue, both economically and socially. And this in turn leads to more poverty, higher crime, and emerging social dysfunction. And actually, the latest national accounts showed us what we already knew. While headline GDP grew by 0.2%, which was a surprise to the downside compared with analysts' consensus of 0.4%, by the way, GDP per capita is actually again contracting. As a result, Australia's GDP per capita has now contracted in 9 of the last 11 quarters. Why? Because we simply have much, much higher numbers of people. This is, of course, the most concentrated series of falls since records began back in 1973. One key factor is the rise of government spending. According to the latest data, government spending as a proportion of GDP is a massive 23%, which is close to the 24% achieved briefly through the COVID crisis back in 2020. And this is actually not the true story either, because they managed to squirrel away further spending in the capital column. And of course, they've also committed massive future spending to support the pointless AUKUS project too. The result is, well, wall-to-wall deficits well into the future. And this despite Australia sitting on amazing natural resources and being in the high-growth sector of the global south. As a result, Chalmers is now calling for productivity improvements, which is really a way to lift taxes further, especially on households, under the guise of productivity growth. It's a sham. Tarek coined burnout economics back in 2021. In short, it describes a situation where a central bank like the RBA has its foot on the brake, attempting to control inflation, but at the same time, fiscal policymakers have their foot hard on the accelerator. The net result? A whole lot of smoke, a whole lot of noise, and not a lot of forward momentum. Actually, the actions of various levels of governments, yes, I include the states here too, to support the economy and the labour market have resulted in the path forward for interest rates being much less certain than it otherwise would have been. The truth is, if the economy had dipped more seriously into contraction due to low migration, or if there had been slightly higher unemployment due to less non-market job creation, then yesterday's rate meeting would have been a lock-in for a cut, and there would probably have been more cuts prior to. New Zealand, of course, lifted rates higher, had a brief recession, cut migration, and lo and behold, property prices are down and they seem poised for economic growth ahead. But ultimately, the strategy of policymakers defined by high levels of migration and extreme levels of tax-funded job creation has not worked for Australian people. The fact is, current interest rates are higher and the economy is more sluggish than it should be, thanks to poor policy choices over recent years, as the Albanese government in particular has pursued a strategy of attempting to mitigate the impact of tighter monetary policy on the economy with a whole raft of stupidity, and costly stupidity at that. Which does beg the question, who is the government really working for? Frankly, it doesn't seem to me to be for the average Australian family. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. May thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.